Turn in your Bibles to 1 Corinthians 13. Look at the last verse of chapter 12. It's the introduction to chapter 13. Chapters 12, 13, and 14 are about spiritual gifts. At the end of chapter 12, he says, he was going to show them a more excellent way, more excellent than the gift of tongues, the gift of healings, the gift of prophecy, whatever it may be. And so in chapter 13, he not only shows them the more excellent way, he explains to them why it's more excellent. And in the first three verses, you'll note this little phrase in verse 1, if I speak with the tongues of men or of angels, but do not have love. That occurs three times in the first three verses. And he said, you can have all these gifts, but if you're not motivated by love, it profits you nothing. In the eighth verse, through the end of the chapter, he gives the third reason why love is so valuable. Because he said, verse 8, these other gifts will be done away. They were temporary by nature. But he said at the beginning of verse 8, love never fails. Love will always be needed among God's people. The middle part of the chapter, verse 4, 5, 6, and 7, tells you why love is more excellent. And it's because of the attitudes and conduct that it causes people to have toward one another. How they treat one another and think about one another. 1 Corinthians 13 is not about the family. But it is talking about the kind of love we have been studying in this lesson. A love that seeks the welfare of others, cares about them. And so it's an excellent chapter. We will not have time to explore it like we could, but at least we're going to introduce it because it's so valuable in understanding how it can impact a husband-wife relationship. Throughout verses 4 through 7, you have couplets. What I mean by that is two words are closely tied together. And to appreciate them, you understand that connection. For example, the first two words. This version says, love is patient, love is kind. Your version may say, well, only probably if you have the King James, love is long-suffering, which is excellent translation. And the reason that's so good is this. There's a patience that the Bible talks about that has to do with trying circumstances. Things are difficult. Can you patiently endure it? That's not this word. And that word, patient under difficult circumstances, is never used of God. There's another word, patient, that they used that had to do with enduring trying people. When people don't act like they should, when people don't treat you right. In the Corinthian situation, you had people in the congregation who were immature spiritually, and they wanted to use their gifts, whether anybody could benefit from them or not. Love is long-suffering. You are suffering. Somebody's not treating you right. But you're not quick to insist upon your rights. That's love is long-suffering. Now, the couplet, love is kind. It's not hard to be kind when you're not suffering. It's when people aren't treating you right that it's hard to be kind. You can see the application in a husband-wife relationship. A man and a woman can be kind to one another in the words they say and the things they do unless they're hurt. Unless their mate has done something to wound them. Now, love is tested. Not feeling love, caring love. Do you do what's good for you, or do you say, here's what you deserve, and here's how I'm going to treat you? Or do you do what's good for them? Love is long-suffering and kind. The next word, love is not jealous. The word refers to a stirring of the feelings. Can be a very good word. It can refer to the stirring of the feelings to protect someone. But it's most of the time used in the Bible of the stirring of the feelings because somebody has something you want. You can't have it, so what do? You tear them down. You do bad things to them. Jealousy is what put Jesus on the cross. Jealousy is what caused the apostles to be arrested and beaten. Jealousy is what caused Joseph's brothers to sell him into slavery. Jealousy is an ugly, ugly sin. So in the Corinthian situation, you can't speak in tongues. You don't have the gift. You're jealous. So, hey, let me tell you about old Joe. He might speak in tongues, but let me tell you something about him. That's jealousy. You can see it in a husband-wife relationship. Maybe the wife is jealous of the husband that he gets to get out and go to work and be around adults all day. She's stuck with the kids all day. So she thinks that's not fair. So how does she treat him when he gets home? Vice versa. He may think, I've got to get up at 4:30, 5 o'clock and go work 10 hours a day. You get to stay home, maybe sleep till 7 o'clock. You don't have the drive and the traffic. And maybe he's jealous of her. And so maybe he says unkind things or whatever it may be. Love is not jealous. Okay, but I sure love you, darling. Well, that love, that feeling love. You can hug them and kiss them and not have this love. Then he says, love does not brag and is not arrogant. Two words go together. The reason it doesn't brag or boast is because it's not arrogant. Arrogance is not a feeling of self-confidence. Arrogance is an overestimation of one's importance or abilities or accomplishments. And when people think too much of themselves, then they brag. How does that make the other person feel? I'm in the Corinthian church. I've got the gift of the tongues, and I boast about it. How does that make you feel if you can't speak in tongues? Is that good for you, for me to do that? No. And men may boast because they make the money or because they are the man. Women may boast for some reason. Maybe sometimes women actually have a higher education, maybe able to earn a higher income than the man. Doesn't make any difference what it is. Love does not boast because it's not arrogant. Why? Because it's not good for people. It's destructive. It tears down. It's certainly true in the family relationship. If it's true in the local church, where you're only seeing one another two or three times a week, what about when you see one another every day? And then he said, love does not act unbecomingly. It does not seek its own. Another couplet. The reason love doesn't act unbecomingly, and that word is used in the 12th chapter, talking about members of the body that are very important, but there's a time and place for their use. And to use them out of that time and place is unbecoming. So love is not unbecoming. It recognizes there's a time and place for things. And the reason you see it recognizes that is because it's not seeking its own. It's seeking the other person's welfare. There may be a time for a man to talk to his wife about her appearance, for example. But not when he's doing it just to be the clown of the party, seeking his own. There may be a time for a woman to correct her husband, for example. But maybe it's not in the presence of others when it's not important and make herself look smart. Love does not act unbecomingly because it's not thinking about me. That's why in the application of the Corinthian situation, I got the gift of tongues. I want to use my gift. But it's not going to help you. So Paul said, sit down and be quiet. That's what love does. And it goes against maybe what you want to do. It goes against what you can do because of how it affects others. And then he says, love is not provoked and does not take into account a wrong suffered. Couple it again. Not saying love never gets angry. God got angry. Moses got angry. Paul got angry. But the point is that second phrase, it doesn't keep a record. Oh, I remember what you did to me. I remember how you talked to me last October the 1st. I got it right here. I won't forget it. And you start adding that up in your little book. You keep an account. And one day, all of a sudden, the other party says some little something and you blow up. Why are you provoked? Because you got that record. Love doesn't do that. Throw the record away. Love doesn't keep an account of wrong suffered. And therefore, the stage is not set. And the King James Version actually translates it easily provoked, I think. Love does not rejoice in unrighteousness, but rejoices with the truth. Love's not glad when people stump their toe, make a mess of things, but rejoices with the truth. Then you got the fourth statement. Beautiful. Love bears all things. The going gets tough. Love bears all things. Why? Because it's good for you. And I'll tell you, if people are going to interact in a church, I know they're all Christians. These people were Christians. But you're going to have to be able to bear some things. People are not always going to be like they ought to be. They may feel bad. They may have other things going on. Love bears all things. Love believes all things. Does not mean love is gullible. If I understand this, it believes the best about people. That's the idea. Not insinuating motives and that kind of thing. Love hopes all. Hopes the best for people. And then love endures all things. Through all the difficulties and trials, I want this relationship. I want to help you. I want us to have a relationship. So I'm willing to endure all things. Beautiful, beautiful section. Apply it to the husband-wife relationship. And it can make a world of difference in a relationship. And so this is the kind of love that we're talking about. And you can readily see, like when we started out, love is long-suffering. It's not feeling love, because your feelings when you're suffering may be, I want to get even. I want to hurt you. You hurt me. But love is long-suffering and kind. It overcomes feelings. Yes.
What you just said about wanting to get even, does that tie into what Paul is condemning in verse 5? It's not provoked. It doesn't take into account the wrong suffered. The reason I ask, this is the same man in 2 Timothy that said Alexander the coppersmith did him much harm. So he took those wrongs into account. He was confident the Lord would avenge him for it.
So well, he's not saying you never remember what somebody did.
Right.
But you don't keep a running total of grievances, because what's going to happen, you know, we use that phrase, the straw that broke the camel's back. You're already aggravated, you got all these things in your mind, and so you get home and your mate says some little old something and you blow up. They wonder, what in the world's going on? It's not what they said. It's that you've been keeping this tally and you're up to the totals more than you can stand. And so, yes, it's a good point, Todd. Paul was provoked with certain people, but it wasn't because he kept a tally of wrongs done. There's a right time to be angry, but he's not talking about that. I'm glad you brought that up. You won't have any more comment on that?
It just struck me that, though often wrong, he was not the type of man to take his own revenge. And it may be that, saying earlier, that may be why we do focus on all the little wrongs, be they real or imagined, that we've suffered at the hands of others. Sometimes we have that instinct to want to balance the scales on our own,
yeah,
rather than trusting in God to do it for us.
Well, certainly all these go hand in hand. And of course, Paul could have done that with John Mark. Took him on the first journey, depending upon him. He left. But later on, Mark is one of his trusted companion, didn't he? And so he didn't hold that against him. And in the case of the First Corinthian man, the fornicator, he wanted to save his soul. And when he repented, he's encouraging the brethren to forgive him. They're worried about how much it hurt Paul. He said, don't let that stop you. You need to forgive him. And so, good point, Todd. Okay. Look at Romans 12. We talk about context. And oftentimes a context is indicated by the beginning and end of a section. We have that right here. Now, we just mentioned in 1 Corinthians 13, you're not going to get the context unless you read the last part of chapter 12, particularly the last verse. But you need to know the context of 12 through 14. So when you turn to Romans 12, verse 9, and you start reading this section, and by the way, all of this is about one another relationships. You see that in verse 5, one of another. You see it in verse 10, be devoted to one another, preference to one another. Verse 16, same mind toward one another. So you're then talking about members of the body and interaction. And so you look at verse 9, this version translates, let love be without hypocrisy. Is this next phrase related to that, or is this just something totally different? It's related to it, isn't it? Here's how you know genuine love. How do you know? By how tight they hug you and kiss you? No. Whether they abhor what is evil and cling to what is good. That's how you know if they really care. Not just what they say. You say, what evil? What good? Talks about that in verse 10 through 20. That evil and that good. And then concludes this section, be not overcome of evil, but overcome evil with good. So you got evil and good in verse 9. You got evil and good in verse 21. And in between those two verses, you have the evil and good described. Now, we've talked about ricochet teaching. Shoot a bullet, you know, it goes here, all over the place. So we say, Romans 12:9, do not become overcome with evil, overcome evil with good. So we ought not commit fornication, we ought not murder. Well, that's true. That's just not the context. And we get that verse 9, and we go get us a concordance, and we get our ricocheting bullet all over the Bible. And then when we're through, everybody slobbers all over us about how great a lesson it was, and we hadn't even talked about what the context is about. So look at the context. So what is it if you have genuine love? And you'll notice he says not one thing about your tender, mushy feelings and all that kind of thing. Not anything about that. It says something about emotions throughout here, but it's not described in this funny feeling in your heart. He said, verse 10, be devoted to one another in brotherly love. You care about your brother? So I love my brethren. I don't talk to them when I'm at church. I never talk to them again until we meet again. I don't know what's going on in their lives, but I sure do love them. Really? He said, give preference to one another in honor. And these words are words like you would use of a close family. If you really care about your family, do you interact? Want to know what's going on in their lives. That's what's good for people. Not because it's good for you. It would be, but it's good for others. Not lagging in diligence, fervent in spirit, serving the Lord. If you're dragging your feet spiritually, is that good for you, brother? If you're here one time out of three in a week, if you never really participate in anything that goes on here, if you're constantly one that's having to be admonished, does that help your brother? No, I'll tell you what helps your brother. When they see somebody that's zealous for the Lord, they're fervent in spirit, that'll help your brother. And then he said, rejoicing in hope, persevering in tribulation. So what about somebody who's always down, always negative, never rejoice in hope, just all things are always bad. Everything's negative. That can help you, brother? Is that good for you, brother? Or to be always rejoicing in hope, like Paul was in prison, full of joy. He wrote the Philippian letter, the joy letter, while he's in prison. Think that helped the Philippians? Rejoicing in hope. Persevering in tribulation, devoted to prayer. Contributing to the needs of the saints. And saints have more needs than financial needs. Do we even know what their needs are? Practicing hospitality. Why? Oh, because I like these folks. We like to drink coffee together and play cards. Is that it? Or do you do it because you can help somebody, because you can serve others, because you L-O-V-E. Love. You care. That's why you practice hospitality. And then he goes on through the chapter, bless those who persecute you. Verse 16, be of the same mind to one another. Don't be haughty, but be lowly. Never take your own revenge. Verse 19, leave that for the Lord. Do good when you're mistreated. Verse 20. And then you have that concluding statement. I've skipped over a lot for sake of time, but you see the idea. As a husband and wife and young people in your family, if you want to discuss a chapter that has to do with love, that's 1 Corinthians 13. It does, but I'll tell you what, Romans 12, 9 through 21 does. It has a real practical application about what caring love entails. So if you're married to somebody who's dragging their feet, not fervent in spirit, does that lift you up or tear you down? If you live with someone who never rejoices in hope, does that lift you up or tear you down? So if you love your mate, wouldn't these things be good for your mate? Back up to chapter 5. Somebody mentioned this in our previous class. Verse 6, while we were still helpless, at the right time, Christ died for who? The ungodly. People who didn't have the right attitude toward God. They didn't reverence God. They didn't care about God. But He died for them anyway. And so, look at verse 8. God demonstrates His own love. How's this love proven? By action. How's it measured? Sacrifice. He demonstrates His love. You ever been hugged by God? I know some of our songbooks talk about seeing His face and feeling His hand. It's all figurative. You know love when you read the New Testament and you come to understand the gospel. You will not doubt the love of God. He demonstrates His love toward us, and that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. God so loved the world. We talked about that. So, number 7 on your lesson, for thought and discussion, how would you feel about a husband or wife who loved this way? If you had problems with your feelings to your mate, but then for the next week and the next month and the next six months, they were long-suffering and they were kind and they were never jealous. And they were always considerate of your feelings and your circumstances. They did not act unbecomingly. If they were bearing with things when things didn't go right, if they were always rejoicing in their faith, if they were fervent in spirit serving the Lord, you reckon it changed your feelings? This can have an impact on the next kind of love we're talking about, affectionate love, because affectionate love is based on delight in, pleasure in the person. And so it can have an impact. 7b, do we have an option as to whether we love our mate this way? Do we? What if they're your enemy? Huh?
Love them anyway.
That's right. Love them anyway. Love your enemy. You have an option if you're going to serve God. And how would this affect the permanence of marriage? Affectionate love is wonderful. We're going to talk about it. Sexual love is part of God's plan too. But this is the love that will make a lasting foundation for marriage. Right here. This is it. There can be times when the affection is not at a high pitch. There can be times when the sexual love, just due to health and other reasons, is not an active part of the relationship. This love, day in, day out, 7 days a week, this is the love to build a relationship on. Look at Proverbs 10:12. Just two passages right here at the end of the lesson. Remember, these are general principles of wisdom, to which there are exceptions, but here's a general principle. Proverbs 10:12, hatred stirs up strife, but love covers all transgressions. Isn't that great? You know, I make a lot of mistakes. My wife covers them up because she loves me. 15:17. Look at 15:17. You know, you don't like somebody, not just like them, you don't care about them. You remember all the little mistakes they make, and you maybe bring it up to the forefront. Hatred stirs up strife, but love covers all transgressions. Oh, that's the wrong one. Hold it. I just read that one, didn't I? 15:17. Better is a dish of vegetables where love is than a fattened ox served with hatred. Better to have love than have the freezer full of meat. To have the bank account brimming over. There's people with plenty of money and plenty of food and nice houses and have terrible families. There's people that drive old cars and don't have much. But there's love. We sing a song in our book where love is in the home. And this kind of love is what will make a family what we want it to be. Look at your... I'll be if I didn't bring mine. Let's see if I got one up here. Look at your survey. If you brought yours, did better than I did. See, now you're going to have to overcome my failure. Look at your survey, page 2. Look at row 4. Starts with, he doesn't show you much tenderness and affection. If he cares about you, will he? We'll see more about that in our next lesson. If he doesn't, does he care about you? Or he says he does it when it makes him feel good. No, that's not caring love. That's a different love. See? Row 6. Just drop down to row 6. His activities take priority over your needs. Is that caring love? Look how many that bothers. You know, row 4, you got 42 and 46%, the first two columns. Here you got 26 and 55%. You're getting high percentages. This is a real problem in a relationship. What if one was to say that's her problem? If it's her problem, whose problem is it? Yes. Tell you what, you're going to have a problem too. Whether she's justified or not, it's something you need to do something we talked about called communicate. Okay. Look down at row 9, 3 rows from the bottom. He doesn't help you much with the children. Got so many good fathers here, very good about that. They're to be commended in their love for their wives by helping them with the children. And then right at the bottom, he won't work to provide for the family. There's lazy men who won't work. Just turn the page, you'll see some similar things. The survey for husbands, go down to the 4th row. She doesn't show you much tenderness and affection. Kind of interesting on men, isn't it? That's 88%, the first two columns. You ever think about that, ladies? Show your husband care, tenderness, affection, because he likes it, because he needs it. Drop down to 6. Her interests take priority over your needs. Is that the relationship where she's not interested in your interest? Why should she be? Because she cares. Row 7, she shows preference to others over you. Somebody else called, well, she's right there to be Johnny on the spot. But what about you? Where do you rank? Row 11, she doesn't keep up her personal appearance. That shows she cares about her husband. She's sloppy. Doesn't fix her hair. Doesn't dress nice. Why? I'm already married. I got him. Don't you care about how he feels? She tries to lead the family. The one above that doesn't keep up her personal appearance. She don't do housework. So these are some examples of real people and their concerns about their relationship that may be of some value as you talk about the family relationship. What are you going to do now after we finish this lesson? Put it in the car, pick it up next time you come? What are you supposed to do? Go over the checklist. By yourself, in the closet. Right? Some of you have to go by yourself if you're not married. But if you're married, do it with your mate. Get your children involved. It might be interesting, in fact, to see what your children observe about the two of you. That'd be interesting. Okay, let's go to our next lesson. Everybody have a lesson 7? Affectionate love. Very important when we study the Bible to understand the different kinds of love. Caring love, affectionate love, and sexual love. The Bible uses all three, spells it the same way, L-O-V-E, but talking about different things. And you'll see as we look at the text, and you'll note we're not depending on the Greek or the Hebrew to define these words. Sometimes you hear people talk about the Greek. Well, I would not depend on that. We're going to show from context that they use the word love in different ways. All right, so we're going to begin by doing that by going to Genesis 29. Genesis 29. Story of Jacob. So, Jacob goes out to seek a wife. How old was he? About 18, 25? Don't answer. How old was he? Huh? Getting close. Try 84. Now look at verse 11. Jacob kissed Rachel and he lifted up his voice and wept. Any emotions involved? I don't know if he'd ever kissed a woman before. Probably kissed them as a family member, friend. This is a little more than that, isn't it? And if he'd never been in love and kissed a woman in love, maybe you understand why he's weeping at 84. I don't know. But there's clearly emotion involved with this relationship with Rachel. And we're going to have more insight about that. Go down to verse 16. Now, Laban had 2 daughters. The name of the older was Leah. The name of the younger was Rachel. Now look at verse 18. Skip 17. Now Jacob loved Rachel. Now we could just open our Bibles and start reading verse 18 and take off and make whatever point we want to make. Oh, Jacob really cared about Rachel and all that stuff. But when you read verse 17, you'll see that's not what he's talking about. Verse 17 says, Leah's eyes were weak. I guess that meant if you saw her, she'd have big, thick glasses, huh? Meant she wasn't pretty. To them, deep-spirited eyes was pretty. How do you know? By the contrast. Look at the contrast. Leah's eyes were weak, but Rachel had 20/20 vision. No. But Rachel was beautiful of form and face. She was a pretty woman. Now Moses writes that, and the Holy Spirit's guiding his pen, remember, before the next verse that says, now, Jacob loved Rachel. If you put the two verses together, why did he love her? Huh? Her appearance. The love we've been talking about, is it based on appearance? No. You readily see this is a different love, don't you? The love we've been talking about is based on esteem and value. This love is based on finding delight or pleasure in someone. And that may be appearance. It may be their conduct. It may be the way they treat you. In this case, what's mentioned is she's pretty. And so Jacob loved Rachel. And so he said, I'll serve 7 years for her. And so when the 7 years was up, he gave her Leah and Rachel. So you got to marry Leah first. That's the custom here. And how Laban pulled off this deceit, I'll never know. At least I sure don't now. How in the world he could wake up in the morning with the wrong woman, I do not know. But he did. And so Jacob says, well, you serve another 7 years, you can have Rachel. So there was the layaway plan and the installment plan. And it was 7 years before he had any sexual relationship with Rachel. What does that tell you about the love in verse 18? What? It does? Tell you, I guess I'm not following you, Annis. He loved her deeply, and so he waited 7 years to have a sexual relationship with her? Is that the love of verse 18?
It's not a sexual love in verse 18.
It's not a sexual love. We just discussed verse 18, not talking about caring love. He had a caring love, you're right, but not verse 18. Verse 18 is based not on her esteem, but what? Her beauty. Her beauty. And so you see that the love of verse 18 is not talking about having a sexual relationship. It's not that. Okay? And so then he had a sexual relationship with both women, the two wives. Yet, when you get down a little bit further, in verse 31, how does the Holy Spirit describe his relationship with Leah? Literally, look at the marginal note, hated. It's translated unloved. Why do you reckon the translator did that?
It's not like he was abusing her physically.
Right, because we associate hated her. Well, he must have beat her every day and not given her any food or clothes. Not talking about that kind of love. He didn't have affection for her. And you'll see that further as we go. That's the idea. But the Holy Spirit said, hated her. Isn't that interesting? There's no indication he didn't care about her, didn't feed her, clothe her. No indication of that anywhere in the story of Jacob and Leah and Rachel.
See,
yes.
Continuing with that statement from verse 31 that saw that Leah was unloved, next statement there, he opened her womb. And so you can, there's another separation between the type of love. They're still engaging in a sexual relationship even if he doesn't.
Exactly. Good point.
Care for.
So here now we know that the love that's talking about here is not sexual love, isn't it? Clearly. And we know that the love here is not affectionate love. That is, there's a difference. She had sexual love, but she didn't have affectionate love. And those are often confused. Men particularly think, well, you know, I try to treat my wife right physically, so what's wrong with her? And I buy her clothes and I give her a credit card. But this is different. This is different. And the way that the Holy Spirit guides the pen of Moses is very instructive. So, who saw this situation? The Lord? You mean the Lord's concerned about your family and whether you love your mate or if you feel unloved? Evidently. I thought the Lord was just concerned about whether we put a piano in the building. No, He's concerned about your family. Whether people are happy or not. Isn't that interesting? And so, Leah conceived and bore a son, named him Reuben. What does Reuben mean in that verse? Why did she name him Reuben? Had a name book. Say, I like this R's. Saw her affliction. Saw she had cancer and was about to die, so she named him Reuben. Right? That's right. Her affliction. Isn't that interesting, the word that's used? This was a burden for this woman. This was a pain. It was emotional pain. It wasn't physical pain. It wasn't financial pain. But it was a pain. She had an affliction. Holy Spirit had Moses write it that way. What a lesson. And so, by the way, before I get too far, how long did Jacob serve for Rachel? How old was he when he got there? How old was he when he married? 91? Would you want to wait 7 years if you were 84? Look back up in the text at verse 20. How did Jacob feel about the 7 years?
But a few days.
But a few days. Why? Because of his love. Affection. You know what, folks? If you have that in your relationship, you can be married 20 years, 40 years, 60 years. It just seemed like yesterday. But if you don't have it, you can be married 2 months and it seemed like 20 years. This is what puts the spice in the relationship. This kind of love makes the years pass on by. You can be poor, you cannot have anything, but if you're in love, it's okay. You'll get by. It's great, great love. Okay, so, and I say that, you've got to have the caring love. That's the foundation. But this is what makes the difficult times, you can bear them well. And so then she has a second son. Now, why would she have all these kids? I mean, God doesn't even love her. In their society, how did the men view having kids? Precious. That was important. So she's got the right idea in that this love is based on delight in the person loved. I can't be pretty like Rachel, but I can do something Rachel can't do, and maybe he'll find delight in me. Did it work?
No.
Didn't work. Sometimes people get in trouble in their marriages today, say, we'll have a kid. Doesn't solve it. Just adds more problems. And so she had the second son. I know I'm out of time. Let me get these two names right quick. And so the second name was Simeon. Why was his name Simeon? Why?
The Lord heard.
Lord heard? heard, the Lord heard? That's interesting, isn't it? Who knows what goes on behind your closed door? I tell you who does, the Lord. He hears the tears. He sees the heartache. The Lord does. And then the final name. I'm out of time, so I'm going to stop there. We'll get Levi and Zebulun in another class. But we'll stop there. I want to pick up on those. All right, so thank you for your good attention. We'll try to finish this lesson in our next class. Might get into the other one, the next one, I don't know. Thank you for your good attention tonight.